It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Next week, thousands of people will converge on Milwaukee for the Republican National Convention.
That's when party leaders will formally announce that former President Donald Trump is the GOP selection for president.
And Republicans will try to solidify their messaging here in the state, a key battleground state, an election where a few thousand votes in one purple state or another could decide the presidency.
We get analysis now on the upcoming convention from a distinguished professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee, Kathleen Dolan. Kathy, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
So you're based in Milwaukee. What is the atmosphere like 1 week ahead of the Republican National Convention?
Well, I would say that the atmosphere in the city is the same as it is at most other times. I think if people are not directly involved in something that's, you know, happening right now as final preparation for next week, there's not a lot of, you know, real clear difference in the life of the city.
There was the news of the anticipated economic boost for the business district, but we're also hearing that it's starting to sound like it could be disappointing, that the impact could be disappointing on bars and restaurants. What do you see there?
Yeah, what we're hearing is that there are many, many fewer events and parties and dinners being scheduled in the various venues around Fiserv Forum and around the convention center where the main convention activities will be held. Bar owners, restaurants, you know, theater owners are all saying that the number of contracts that they have are many, many, many fewer in number than they would have had in place for the Democratic National Convention had it taken place in 2020, before it had to go virtual. So it does sound like the economic impact on the city or for city business people will be much, much lower than had been anticipated when the announcement was made that Milwaukee had been chosen as the location.
Now to the convention itself, the American people, we've pretty much known who the nominee is since March. So what is the value of a convention?
Well, you know, the convention has value to the parties, regardless of the fact that we know who the nominees are going to be. You know, I always like to say that conventions are really massive information and sort of education machines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Republican Party will have, you know, sort of 4 days of getting their people from all over the country together, you know, getting people excited about November, getting plans in place, you know, mobilizing activities to get voters involved. It also gives them an opportunity, you know, for the televised pieces of the event to speak to the American people, to, you know, offer voters a look at their candidates and, you know, not just their candidate for president and vice president, but, you know, we'll see candidates for Senate and House and governor for around the country. And so it's really a way for the party to send its message and to have at some level sort of, you know, unanswered time, right? There won't be necessarily Democrats at the same moment saying, oh, but here's our package. So it'll really be the focus on, you know, the one party and its candidates.
And by the numbers, there are over 2,400 delegates selected to participate in the RNC, including Wisconsin's 41 delegates. What sort of official party business will happen at the convention?
Well, you know, there will be a roll call, obviously, mm-hmm. at which they will nominate the presidential and vice presidential candidates. There'll be some work on what we call the party platform, you know, which is a set of policy positions and issue positions that the candidates are, you know, hopefully going to articulate in their own campaigns. In 2020, the Republican Party did not do a platform. They didn't come up with a set of policy, you know, positions to advertise to the public. So, you know, we're going to have to see the degree to which they do something this time. You know, I think it's pretty clear to see for most people that, you know, what the Republican Party stands for these days is what former President Trump stands for and what he says on issues. So the sort of typical negotiation among delegates from all over the country to reach some consensus on issues is probably a less central activity for the Republicans this time.
And that's interesting you say that, because we have seen the reporting on a memo. This is from the New York Times. They obtained from the top Trump advisors on how they plan to dramatically scale back to, you know, scale back the official platform of the Republican Party. And it sounds like this is something that you've seen before.
Well, we saw it in 2020, but that was really the first time. I mean, you know, so political parties, as you say, they're bringing delegates from all over the country. And generally, right, you know, party delegates from one area of the country may be more or less conservative or liberal than delegates from another. In both parties, that used to be the case. And so if you think about, say, the Democratic Party, you're going to have, you know, more conservative Democrats, you're going to have more moderate Democrats, you're going to have really progressive liberal Democrats. And a platform is about people, you know, who might take different positions on issues, even within the same political party or shades of issues, to reach some consensus about what the party proper stands for. But within the Republican Party in these last three election campaigns, we have seen, you know, the party coalesce around the beliefs of one individual. And so it's not the case that they have to really sit and argue or try to compromise about, you know, what New Hampshire Republicans think and whether they agree with New Mexico Republicans or something like that. Because really, you know, everything is set by former President Trump and whatever he says his position is on an issue today.
We are talking about the Republican National Convention, which is taking place in Milwaukee a week from today. Kathleen Dolan is our guide, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee. Kathy, an Emeritus Professor of Political Science at UW-Madison, Howard Schwaber recently spoke on Wisconsin Today about the designated protest zones during the RNC, and Schwaber said protesters are claiming they are being silenced, while event organizers say the zones prevent disruption and increase safety.
An effective protest sort of has to be disruptive, at least to the extent of getting people's attention and distracting them from what, you know, what's going on. And so there really are two opposing fundamental goals here, and the courts have never resolved the question. They've never established when or how these kind of free speech zones are permissible, or when they go too far in isolating protesters from their intended audience.
What do you make of the designated protest zones?
So, you know, there was definitely a controversy over the designation of the zones this time. And it was very clear that the Republican Party, or the people planning the convention, wanted to keep the protest zones as far away from the direct sites of the convention activities, the convention center, the Baird Center here in Milwaukee, and then the Fiserv Forum. And they talked about essentially not wanting delegates and other party members to have to see the protests. Their argument was that it could cause confrontation, but I think it was pretty clear that they just wanted to sort of shield their attendees from the protests. And so they had worked very hard to try to get the Secret Service to expand what they're calling the hard zone, and to move the protest zones. And one of the protest zones was moved, you know, a considerable distance. And so the zones will exist at the northern end and the southern end of what they call the hard zone now, but they will not be adjacent to either of the facilities. And free speech people suggest that, you know, speech that is articulated blocks and blocks away, where nobody who is a target of your speech can hear you, isn't particularly effective. So from the perspective of free speech, and from the perspective of people who have been protesting the activities at the convention, it's been a disappointing decision.
Let's turn to the vice presidency. During party conventions, leadership announces presidential nominees and their running mate, but we have not seen that yet, a vice president named for President Trump, former President Trump. What is the delay here? What do you anticipate?
Well, I wouldn't say there's a delay proper, because there really isn't a specific deadline for announcing the vice president. I mean, generally, we know the vice president, the vice presidential candidate, close in time to the convention, you know, if only for logistical reasons where a candidate's family, you know, might be brought to the convention to be on stage. And, so there are ways in which the internal people probably know who the selection is and probably are working, you know, to figure out how to get that person and family members to the convention. The candidate, him or herself, was almost assuredly already going to be there. But, you know, the former president has suggested that he wants to use it as kind of a, you know, big surprise moment and an announcement to gather extra attention. So, you know, if you look in time, you know, there isn't a particular date by which the announcement has to be made. And again, as things happen in the Republican Party, it will happen on the timeline and schedule of the former president.
And quickly here, as we wrap up, speculation swirling over whether President Biden will step aside from the 2024 campaign. What are your thoughts on this?
I think that my thoughts are that if we look back in time at debates and if we look back at time at different campaign moments, almost every candidate has at least one moment, perhaps more, where something goes very wrong for them or sideways. And if you remember back in 2016 when the Access Hollywood tapes came out and the things that former President Trump had said about women, you know, there were calls for him to step down. He wasn't the appropriate candidate, et cetera. And he moved forward. And so I think that everybody, you know, acknowledges, the president himself acknowledges that that first debate was not his best performance. But I think that people forget that these sorts of events are actually almost a regular occurrence. Everybody will have a bad moment or a bad step, and then they move on. And it's very easy for us to say that this one high profile event will have an outsized impact. But in the end, campaigns are won or lost, you know, based on many, many factors.
Kathleen, thanks for joining us. Kathleen Dolan, political science at UW-Milwaukee.